Welcome back to another episode of Political Life. Today, I'm very glad to have on Steve Palmer of Forbes Tate. Steve heads up, I don't know what his title is, but I know he heads up or runs the 50-state operation there at Forbes Tate. Everyone involved in politics and government relations knows Steve or knows of him. He's just a very, very smart guy politically, always kind of has his finger on the pulse. Forbes Tate is constantly in the news for growing and doing different things, and we'll have to ask Steve about that. There, I just recently saw something in news about Forbes Tate and or their parent company and multi-state. We're just so glad to have him back. He lives in the great state of Colorado, the state that recently legalized psychedelics, which is now going across the country. But today he is in D.C., waiting to catch a flight back to Colorado, the great state of the great purple state of Colorado, with a very interesting governor. But Steve, always great to chat with you, and welcome back to the show.
Great. Wonderful to be back with you as well. It's always makes for a good day when I get to visit. So enjoy listening to the podcast, as you know, every time I go out for a run, which happens to be every day. You're on the reel. And I think the perspective that your guests bring forward and the anecdotes certainly help fill my funnel in terms of like what's happening. And so I appreciate the service that you're providing, you know, to kind of help each of us get a little bit smarter in politics. So thanks. Good to see you.
Well, it's good to see you, and thank you for saying that. And really, the key, quite frankly, is I just try to say or do as little as possible, and I'm not being self-deprecating, and let the guests kind of, you know, let them shine and talk about their experience. And I think that's why people find it interesting. And for those of you that may not remember, Steve is an ultra runner. Last time we talked, he was running through the, and not only on flat ground, running through the mountains of Colorado, and he does these races periodically. I mean, how far do you have another one scheduled? And what was the last one that you ran?
Yeah, the ultra adventure continues. I have a couple races on the books. I've yet to pick out the 100 for the year, but I'm definitely going to be doing up at Leadville, a 50 miler. It's called Silver Rush, which is great. And that'll be in July. I may go back to Run Rabbit Run, which is just a wonderful race, 100 miles up throughout Steamboat Springs. There's around 20,000 feet of vertical gain and descent. So you're really able to clear your mind and test yourself throughout. And I think if you recall, one of the reasons I love ultra running so much is it's the time that I spend training where I really get to go out, not only, you know, make improvements to my health and wellness, but to really help me think through some of the bigger issues in life and in work and in policies. Cause it's just, you know, it's a great time to think when I train. And at the end of the day, there's a benefit to it because I go a little bit further than I think I can. And oftentimes I come out of it with some better ideas for our clients. So it's a commitment for life, and I really appreciate and enjoy the heck out of it. So thanks for asking.
Well, I love how you mentioned that. Yeah, I may just do the, I love how the 50 is just kind of like, you know, most people going out for a 5K. It's very, very funny. And now I also know you, are a big skier. What is one of your favorite places or your go-to place to ski?
Oh, wow. It's, you know, I live in Colorado and I've skied there most of my life. For me, you know, kind of where I'm at is the best place that I enjoy skiing. Right.
So where close to your home do you like?
Well, close to the home, Vail's always a hoot. I was just there last week, skied by myself, skied 26,000 vertical and 26.8 miles, coincidentally. And one of my mates said, "Oh, look, you skied a marathon." but I have to, you know, Ski Utah, my friends there. You know, whenever I go to Utah, I just have an absolutely wonderful time, whether it be Snowbird or Deer Valley. And, you know, like, I, you know, really wherever I am, wherever I'm locking into my boards, I'm going to make the best of it. that day because it's just getting out and enjoying the powder. And quite honestly, this year in Colorado and Utah and throughout the whole West, the snow has been just unbelievably good. You know, great powder days and bluebird to follow. So it's all great times.
That's great. That's great. All right. Well, I have, before we get to all the things that Forbes Tate is doing in regards to infrastructure and EVs and all of that, let's talk, everyone who listens loves politics. Let's talk a little bit about politics, presidential politics on the Republican side. A lot of different Republican governors who people are talking about. Sununu in New Hampshire, Youngkin in Virginia, Haley, and DeSantis, obviously. So let's start there. Why is it just a coincidence that all these Republicans thinking about it are governors, or is that a good training ground? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at what the Republican Governors Association did and continues to do in terms of candidate recruitment, you know, they've gone out and they've identified candidates at the gubernatorial level that were, whether former CEOs, just fantastic, impactful leaders, and not necessarily candidates that have been tied up in the issue set, but really are people who are able to get stuff done. Governors in particular on the Republican side, I think, did a really good job of managing their states through the pandemic. Governors on both sides of the aisles don't have the ability to come up with excuses, well, why they can't get something accomplished. Their job is, they're the CEO of a state. Their job is to make sure that they have a balanced budget. Their job is to make sure that, you know, welfare, if someone is needing to get public programs, that they get them and that there's not excuses. Oh, the technology's down. We can't get the, you know, the customers what they need. They have to fix it. So every day they're operating like a CEO. And from my perspective, there's no better role that prepares someone to be, to hold higher office than a governor. Senators are wonderful. Congressmen and Congress members of the House of Representatives are wonderful. But at the end of the day, I'd rather have a governor guiding our country because of the body of experience with which they have to operate every day in and day out in each of their respective states. And to your point, if you look at the field right now on the Republican side, quite a few of the candidates that are starting to take a serious look at it are governors. And they're some of the best governors in the country. And who knows, there may even be Democratic governors to decide to look at this election as well as a potential for them to, right, take a run at the presidency. But on the Republican side, you know, the field, I think it'll start taking shape over the next 4 months or so with the likes of, you know, does Youngkin jump in? Haley's already jumped in. Certainly, you know, DeSantis is getting pressure to announce, and I think there's no secret that he will. Sununu is, I think, kicking the tires on this as well and really trying to take time from, I think, from Chris's perspective to say, okay, is this the right time for someone like him to run? And I think Youngkin's taken a similar calculus to it. And that to me, that's exciting because if you have candidates, all these folks in large part get along. And I think when you have candidates such as them that decide to get into the race, the benefit of that is if you focus on, you know, doing your job and putting forward the effort they need to run the election and potentially bring the conversation away from the fringes, but more to the center in terms of like, what do we need to do as a country to be run efficiently and, you know, make some of the harder decisions? I think it's solid. And it also will deflate, I hope, some of the Trump impact. He had his run, and, you know, I think many of the folks in the party are like, okay, time to move on and let some of these other accomplished leaders take a run at it. And I'm fine with that. And so we'll see what the voters say. But, you know, I think as more and more candidates come and step forward, the ability to keep the conversations honest and not throwing bombs, I think is great. Right.
It's so interesting that there's so many of them that are A-listers that are thinking about it. When you think about those governors, they're all top notch, all, you know, doing, you know, very have great support in their states. And I'm really just thinking not only, you know, clearly Governor DeSantis does, he won by 20 plus points, but Governor Youngkin, Haley and Sununu, all, you know, very well accomplished, track records, and, would all be formidable candidates. It's really, it's a deep field.
Yeah, it truly is. And, so it'll be interesting to see, to your point. And I think collectively, each of them lead thoughtfully. They're not throwing out bad idea after bad idea or getting wrapped around the axle on the politics. You know, personally, I'm a little bit concerned about the, you know, DeSantis, sometimes he gets a little far out, I think, on punishing companies on, you know, positions they may hold with their employees. That one troubles me a little bit. You know, conservative principle doesn't really apply there, you know, in terms of letting companies make decisions that are, that they feel are best and right. I think you saw it recently with the Disney decision. You kind of scratch your head a little bit around that one. But we'll see. We'll see where the electorates are. You know, I was reading something the other day that, if you can believe this, Sununu is ranked more conservative than DeSantis, but he does it in a way that people aren't like offended by it because of how Chris, I think, governs. And I think that people are appreciate the fact that he's kind of a little bit of a quiet governor.
I was going to say, quieter style, more New England style. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you live in Connecticut. You get it, right? It's just do your job and let the actions speak for themselves and the outcomes speak for themselves. You know, New Hampshire's economy is pretty doggone strong. They punch way above their weight in terms of the size of their state.
Yes.
You know, it's tremendous. And I presume quite a few people who live in Massachusetts have picked up and moved up to New Hampshire and have made it their home because it's a more favorable tax climate. For a little bit better place to raise kids, you know, in the community. So I think it's neat. I think the presidential is going to be an exciting time. And personally, I'm pretty excited about a lot of candidates that are jumping in. You know, like right now, you know, Chris Sununu and I have been friends. I've been friends with his family for 30 plus years. You know, I'm going to put my shoulder in and help him think through what makes the most sense. If he runs, that's amazing. It's wonderful. If he doesn't run, I know that he thought through it fully, right? And I think all the candidates are the same way. They're all going to think through this fully and make sure it's the right decision for themselves, their family, and the country. And that's all we could ask for.
And on the Democratic side, if the president doesn't run, obviously we have Gavin Newsom. What other governors on the Democratic side may jump in?
I would not be surprised in the least if Jared Polis doesn't jump in. You know, while I'm a Coloradan, you know, he would be an interesting candidate for sure.
Yes.
Incredibly smart. While practical. He's a Democrat, let's be honest, and how he governs is not always in liking of, it's not straight down the line on the Democratic side.
Yeah. Very practical.
Yeah. And he's brilliant. You know, we'll see how the field on the Democratic side fills out. I think they're being a little bit more slow to the draw, rightfully so, given that they're
right.
Parties in control and right. They want to do something that disrupts.
Right.
Right. What might be happening there, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. And it's going to be an interesting time. My colleague. Yeah. That would be an interesting time for sure.
All right. Let's jump over to work. You've been very busy, you know, as the, I know you've been spending a lot of time on, I think transportation and infrastructure, traveling around the country. What's going on in that space? A lot going on and you've been busy.
Yeah, truly. There's, you know, it's pretty great when a country can pivot, you know, away from a healthcare crisis and then recognize that there's other challenges and that there's other opportunities that need to be created and solved for. One in particular that, you know, we have quite a few clients that we're helping out is in the electronic vehicle space, where each of the states are coming up with their own plans, Jim. And, you know, what we're doing is we're helping our clients find the right state and the right opportunity and the right set of partners for them to, you know, help a state develop a smart electronic vehicle solution. South Carolina is leading a lot of the EV activity presently. They've had a handful of companies that have opened up operations there, made some big commitments. So that I, you know, if you're looking at the board, keep a close eye on what South Carolina is doing around EV. It's very interesting. Colorado has some really great plans in place as well. They've really architected a smart approach to making the awards. That's another state to keep an eye on. And it, you know, the other great thing about it, it's a fair process that most of the states are, that all the states are managing as relates to EV dollars being rolled out. So that's keeping us busy because there's 50 states and there's 50 different ways to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that has us really hopping for sure.
So why do you think a state like South Carolina is so ahead of the curve in an area like this?
You know, that's a great question. I think that, you know, they have quite a few auto companies that, you know, put down roots there over time. So they have, if you will, some built-in infrastructure in terms of like, okay, what makes sense? And then the governor is really fully committed himself to that. It's also access to the highway, to the interstate. It's also favorable tax environment to help grow jobs. You know, if a company moves there, they have good incentives in place for those companies to continue to grow. And I think that collectively, all those things have just led to just a positive outcome in that regard. Late last year, National Governors Association actually hosted in South Carolina an electronic vehicle event where they had representatives from nearly all 50 states and industry come in and sit down and talk about like what the states are going to be doing as relates to EV. And South Carolina was purposely picked, and the governor and his team just did an amazing job in running that program. I'll send you for your show notes some of the information from that conference just so you kind of get a feel for.
Yeah, that'd be great.
The thought went. Yeah.
And not to put you on the spot, but what are some of the things that you've seen that states do that is the correct way or a you know, a smart, and what are some of the things without naming the states that you've seen that is really, you know, not a, do you have any good and bad examples of the ways that they're approaching it?
You know, it's early days. This is a deployment of billions of dollars. And because the rigor was required at the outset to put together the EV plan, you know, all the states, you know, they took it very seriously. Now the devil will be in the details in terms of what programs ultimately get selected and how each state does it, right? Is it a local control, right? Where they're going to have a county drive their application process and help make a decision, or is it all going to run up through the state? So, you know, a lot of it is still, I think it's too early to determine like which states are doing it best and right. And I think as the programs, as you start to hear more and more announcements, you know, you're hearing announcements now in the private sector, right? Where companies, for example, like a Blink, where there's an announcement that they're, you know, the sole provider to a particular company, auto company, right? To be their EV solution set. That's a private sector decision. The public sector ones really haven't started rolling out yet. And so once they do, you know, you'll be able to tell pretty quickly if it was like a, you know, is the process that they're going through on par with really what the expectation was.
And what else is taking up your time or the team at Forbes Tate in the States?
Yeah, you know, the ongoing conversation around healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the what pressures are going to be are being placed on telemedicine. Are the states going to roll the rules back, or are they going to continue to allow companies that were innovative over the course of time to help deliver quality, efficient care and help drive down costs? Are they going to allow that to continue to go forward in the manner with which we had? Because it was pretty robust in that regard. And we've seen a little bit also in some pressure to get rid of telemedicine almost as an excuse, like in the dentistry space. We do some work with a company called Bite, which, you know, they're if you or I need orthodontic, you know, braces, if you will, you know, some people would argue you should go to the orthodontist and get that all that treatment done. But technology is such, you could use a company like Byte, do all the imagery from your iPad, take the pictures, do telemedicine, things of that nature, and get, you know, as good of product outcomes than you would if you, you know, had the old traditional setting, but at a third of the cost. And so then you're like, okay, how do you address telemedicine, bend the cost curve, and ease of access for patients and drive good healthcare outcomes? So debates like that are being impacted through the whole telemedicine discussion as well, right? Because efforts to maybe change how telemedicine views that. So that keeps us pretty busy. And again, at the end of the day, you hope that the legislators kind of understand that evolution is taking place. Evolution of delivery of care is taking place. And there's things that we could do now very differently and far better than we could 5 years ago, even a year ago.
Yeah, the convenience factor of being able to have a doctor's appointment via the, you know, a Zoom call and then communicating after, you know, on their platform, it's just such a game changer so different than having to call up and, you know, schedule an appointment, go see them. And then, you know, how do you follow up? But yeah, so the new telehealth, it is just such a more convenient and efficient model for both the patient and the doctor's office.
And if we also, if we're being honest, you know, what we learned over the last 3 years was living in the urban corridor, you know, in a big city, may not necessarily be what people really want to do long term, and that they move out to rural areas. They move out to, you know, Western states where I live.
Colorado, in the mountains.
Yeah. And if you don't have a robust telehealth capability, it's going to be really difficult to continue to deliver quality care. Not because there's not good doctors in rural areas, but there's not a lot of them. And so, right, you know, you have to make sure you're able to get that quality care. Plus, if you also look at things like behavioral health and the tragedies that we continue to see, you know, with, you know, in that space and with teenagers and just really at all economic stratifications, telehealth is important in that regard. We don't have a client that we look after doing behavioral health over telehealth, but you know, we do some work with the Children's Hospital Association and things of that nature. It's a huge, huge endeavor. And also, if you look at what Governor Murphy is doing out of New Jersey as the chair of National Governors Association this year, it's mental health is his focus. And he recognizes the importance of making sure that we're listening and we're taking time to understand what the issues are that are impacting the mindset and how people are kind of their view on life. And it's an incredibly important endeavor. And that's a program that we're super excited to be a part of with a couple of our clients, because, you know, that's the nexus of ensuring that you're providing quality care in every means possible. And if you think about it, this is how kids communicate today. This is how people communicate, is with your iPhone. And if you don't, you need to make sure that we have solutions and tools available to people 24/7. And what a great way to do it, right? That's why ongoing commitment to telehealth matters.
Yeah. Great point. Yeah. And it's being debated almost in every state capital, you know, because of the crisis that occurred during the COVID pandemic and really starting to be addressed. So, lastly, let's talk about your firm. You guys continue to innovate and create a very unique and interesting platform. The latest I saw was some news about you all in multi-state, which everybody is very familiar with. Tell us about everything going on at the firm.
Yeah, you know, it's about it. We're about a year, a little bit over a year into public policy holding company going public. Forbes Tate is one of the assets inside the public policy holding company. And as you mentioned, yes, PPHC did just announce acquisition of Multistate. To your point, Multistate is just an amazing firm. I've been blessed to work with folks over there for over 20 years in some capacity or another. They are a best of breed regulatory compliance policy outfit, operate in all 50 states. And to have a company such as them now part of our portfolio of companies by our parent company is really impactful. You may have also seen the news towards the end of the year, our public policy holding company also acquired KP Public Affairs out of Sacramento, fondly known as Kapow. And so, you know, we have capabilities through our holding company now, full service in California, and, you know, our other assets based in DC and things like that. It really allows us as one member of that company, just to know that when a client comes to us that, you know, if there's a conflict or if there's something we can't do, by golly, we know some other best of breed firms that can. And it's been a great model. A lot of people have taken notice of it. And, you know, I, for one, value and appreciate the leadership that, you know, our founder, Jeff Forbes, has shown in this regard and the whole PPHC board. So it's pretty exciting times. And I think if you look at the government affairs market basket, there's been a couple other firms that took notice of what we have done. While no others are publicly traded, there's certainly been others that are starting to, if you will, blend assets together, mm-hmm. To kind of create, you know, a firm and capacity, you know, in multiple sectors. And that, to me, it's just the way the industry has grown up writ large. And I think it speaks to the importance of the work that we all do, and that's in the collective voice of every consultant in government affairs and every consultant in public affairs, that there's a high level of rigor that our clients expect of us. There's a higher level of expectation in terms of competency. I know when I got in the lobby in early days, you know, yeah, there's a lot of rodeoing and cowboying going on. And now it's, you know, you have to be on your best game every day. Clients deserve that. And I know you, in your business day to day, that you make darn certain that you're executing at that level. And I do my level best to make sure we're executing at that level as well, day in, day out. So that's why, just overall for the entire sector, it, you know, it makes me happy to see that, you know, that there's like, we're building companies out in smarter ways now.
And do you think, you know, obviously acquiring KP Public Affairs in California, the largest state, do you think you'll be looking at some other larger states, you know, Texas, Florida, Illinois, or New York, or something like that, and adding the larger states to your team of companies?
We'll see what PPHC has in mind. I think that, you know, I think first and foremost, I think that, you know, we want to make sure we're just delivering and executing right now on behalf of our clients, and, you know, where growth and opportunity takes us, we'll see. Right. But yeah, it's an exciting time for sure at Forbes Tate, and to be a member of PPHC, it's a real honor.
Well, Steve, as always, it is great to have you on. Great to touch base again. We appreciate you squeezing us in before you run off to National and catch a flight home. And I assume you're visiting the headquarters there in D.C. of Forbes Tate.
Yeah, I came in for a couple of meetings, client meetings as well. It was crazy. This trip literally just got put on the books, not even 24 hours ago, and I was in New Mexico on client matters. It was just go, go, go. Flew through Colorado, unpack, repack, I literally bought the ticket as I was driving to the airport. So it happens, but that's okay. That's, you know, the expectation that our clients have and that the commitment we give our clients. So.
And will you be skiing this weekend? And if so, where?
Yeah, you got me. I will.
Well, you should be. You live in Colorado. It's March.
My daughter, what?
I said you should be. You live in Colorado and it's March. Best skiing of the year. Yeah,
that's the truth. So my daughter and I are going to, we'll head up. I think we'll hit Vail again. It's pretty interesting. There's a really cool company called Gravity House that I joined, and a couple of my buddies are some of the founders of it. And it's a really cool concept because it's, you know, they have facilities at like Vail and Breckenridge and Tarhe and other markets. And so when I go, well, I don't have to, because I drive up there. It's essentially like having a country club at the mountain where, you know, I can go hang out, have a cup of coffee, head out to the mountain, come back, relax, wait till traffic breaks up, work out if I want to, and dry house. So it's kind of changed my whole mindset when I go skiing now, where I can be a little bit more relaxed and not feel compelled to rent a hotel room.
Oh my God, that sounds so great.
It's amazing. They'll probably be coming on the East Coast at some point, but it's a cool concept. So anyway, we're going to go hit Vail, then we'll hit Gravity House, have a little dinner, and drive home late night.
Oh my God. That sounds great. And do you have, are they part of the Epic Pass, Epic team?
Or? Yeah. Vail's Epic. Yeah. Vail is Epic. And I do Epic and Icon both.
Okay.
Which is awesome.
Well, that makes sense. All right, Steve, thank you so much for coming on. And for our listeners out there, remember, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also sign up for our email at politicallife.net. We hope you all are doing well, and we will see you next week.